Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sanhedrin Daf Pei Hei. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The topic that is found at the top of Daf Pei Hei is the Nosei. You'll notice in the margin of the Gemara, in our marked edition, Ben, a son, Mahu Shiase Shaliach Le'oviv L'Hakoisei U'L'Kawaloi. Can a son be appointed as the agent of the court to issue lashings to his father, or to issue a klola, or in our case a nidui, excommunication? Rav Sheshes Posek Shemuter. In our Gemara, we will see that Rav Sheshes rules that it is allowed. As we go on in the Gemara, there will be challenges to this position. As you scan ahead on the daf, you'll notice a diamond geometric form. This is explained under our Mivneh structural note that appears likewise in the margin. The Mivneh, you see the diamond feature, Kushos al Rav Sheshes Shehitir, Mi Mekoros. We will present sources that will serve as questions on Rav Sheshes, who had allowed the son being a Shliach Lahakoisu Ilakaloi. Turning to the Gemara, second line from the top on Daf Pei Hei, Borul Mine Merav Sheshes. The question was asked of Rav Sheshes, Ben, Mahu Shiase Shliach Le'oviv L'Hakoisei U'L'Kaloloi. Can a son be appointed by the court as an agent to issue, to carry out the makos, the lashings penalty, if the father so deserved, or to excommunicate a father? Amarle, Rav Sheshes said, Rav Sheshes answered as follows, V'acher mi hetiroi, elo kavod shamayim odif. An outsider to hit someone with lashings, would that be allowed? Of course not. It's not allowed to hit someone unless the honor of heaven is at stake. Hence, when someone is in violation of a halacha, of a law, and Beis Din says he is to be lashed, the lashing is for the sake of the honor of shamayim, of heaven. Hachanami, the Gemara goes on to say, here too, in the case of a son, with regard to lashing his father, kavod shamayim odif, the honor of heaven is more important than the honor of one's own father. Meisvei, we've put this word in a diamond, as we mentioned earlier, to suggest that the Gemara will be raising a couple of questions from sources on Rav Sheshes. Uma. The source begins and says, Uma mi shemetsuve lahakoisoi. Mitsuve shelo lahakoso. Mi sheeno mitsuve lahakoisoi. Eno din shemetsuve shelo lahakoisoi. This source is a bit obscure. The Gemara will raise some possibilities of how to understand it. But first of all, first reading would indicate, Uma mi shemetsuve lahakoso, mind you, someone who is commanded to hit him. That is in the form of the 40 or 39 lashes of Beis Din. Mitzuvah shelo lahakoso means he is also commanded not to go beyond the 40. So, in a situation where there is a mitzvah to issue lashings, to hit someone, there is also a prohibition of doing that which he is not commanded to do. In a situation where one is already restricted in hitting, all the more so one is prohibited to hit. My love, what must be the topic of this source? Edi v'edi b'moko mitzvah. The Reisha and the Seifa, the beginning and the second half of the source, are dealing under circumstances where there is a mitzvah to hit, and that would be in the case of court issued lashings, where the basic hitting is a mitzvah. In the Reisha, there is some level of allowance. In the Seifa, there is no allowance made for. So ha bivno, ha biacher. The Seifa, the second part, is obviously talking about a son, and the Reisha is talking about an outsider. Let us glance at the Rashi, where there is a star just across from here, a little bit down. Bino she'eno mitzuvah lahakosei afilu b'mokom mitzvah. The son who is not mitzvah is not commanded to hit, even if you're dealing with a mitzvah, namely the court issued lashings. Rashi goes on, Almo eino nasa shliach lekach. Therefore, you can see from the way the source is set up that a son cannot be an agent to issue the lashings. Eino din shemuzer shelo lakosa shelo b'mokom mitzvah. And all the more so, he is warned not to hit his father if it's not in the context of lashings. So after all said and done, we've dashed underline what is of most significance for us, and that is the expression mi she'eino mitzuveh lahakosei. The son is not commanded to issue court lashings. The Gemara goes on to say, loy, idi v'idi, loy shno b'noi, v'loy shno acher. The Reisha and the Seifa is not making a distinction between the son nor an outsider. V'loy kashya. And still, the source itself does not pose any difficulty in the understanding of the source. Kan v'mokli mitzvah, kan shaloi v'mokli mitzvah, v'hochi katoni. There is going to be a distinction made between circumstances under which there is a mitzvah and circumstances where there is no mitzvah to hit. V'hochi katoni, and thusly, one should read the source. Uma v'mokli mitzvah, she mitzvah lahakoso. Mind you, in a situation where there is a mitzvah to hit, even for a son to hit, and we're referring to court lashings. Mitzvah shelo lahakoso. Still, one is warned not to go beyond the 39. Sheloi b'mokom mitzvah. In a circumstance where there is no mitzvah to hit, she'eno mitzvah lahakoso, where there is no issue of a court-issued lashing, eino din she mitzvah shelo lahakoso. All the more so is it a command not to hit at all. Toshma. So we try another source and see if from here we will see a kasha on Rav Sheshes. Hayotze lehoreg. Someone who has been sentenced to court execution. Ubo v'noi v'hikohu v'kilulo chayov. And offender's son comes along and hits him and or curses him. He is guilty. Bo acher v'kohu v'kilulo poter. If an outsider came and hit or cursed the offender, he would be exempt. V'havinon bo, and we ask, mai shno benoi umai shno acher? Why does there appear a distinction between the son of the offender and an outsider? V'omar Rav Chisda, b'mesarvin boi lotze sviyeno yotze. This source is featuring a situation where the offender is resisting being taken out to the execution site. Being that he is resisting, the court has to impose force in order to get him out there. There's a Rashi that says, V'eino yotze bashminan debeno eino nasa shliach bezin lachufo lotzeis. This source is telling us that if we're going to assume these are the circumstances that he is resisting to being taken out, and even though it's under court auspices to have this person taken to the execution site, the son, nevertheless, the son of the offender cannot serve in that capacity. This is a kasha on Rav Sheshes. So the Gemara answers, Rav Sheshes, Muki law, B'she'ein Misarvin Bolotzes. Rav Sheshes will set up this source as talking about the offender is not resisting. He's willingly going out. Oh, if he's willingly going out, then I understand why the son of the offender has no right to hit or curse his father. Of course, the question is going to be, why does a stranger have a right? If the offender himself is cooperating, why should the outsider be able to come along and hit him? Before we go further, though, in the Gemara, we have to take note of the geometric forms that we now encounter. We see some triangles. The triangles are explained under the Mivneh heading. The note says, Kushios, these are questions. Kol echod mesumon, each triangle is noted, kidei la'azor la'akoiv achar ma'alach ha'gemorah, in order to assist the attempt to follow the, to keep track of the course of the discussion. The al haloimed levarer, b'chol shlav, it's upon each one of us who are studying this to clarify at each stage, ha'im tshuvasei shel Rav Sheshes kayemes, is Rav Sheshes's answer still intact? Now, let's just remind ourselves that Rav Sheshes set up this source as a case of Ein Mesarvin Boilotseis. We've dashed underlined that so we can keep track or concentrate on that answer, which would have helped Rav Sheshes's cause in understanding why the son is restricted in hitting the father, when Rav Sheshes himself says that a son can be an agent to carry out court lashings. So the Gemara asks, as we mentioned before, I hachi, if you're talking about a case of ein misarvin boilotzis, where he is not resisting, then acher nami, an outsider also should be chayev if he hits him. The Gemara answers, acher gavrok telahu. As far as an outsider is concerned, the offender is considered, since a verdict was passed on him for execution, he's considered as if he's already dead. Hence, there's no problem in hitting him. Question, v'homar Rav Sheshes, but Rav Sheshes has been known to say on the following case, b'ishoy yoshein umeis chayav, if someone embarrassed a sleeping person, and the sleeping person never got up, he died, there nevertheless is an obligation, a penalty. He must compensate the family. On the grounds that the sons, the children of the sleeping person, were embarrassed. So with that approach to restitution, the case of hitting the gavro ketela, so to speak, should also carry with it a penalty. Hocha b'mai askinan. The case featured in the source where we saw exemption, where we said potter, we said acher came along, the outsider came along and hit the dead man, so to speak, the man who was already ruled, already received the gemar din, and is yotzei lahoreg, is on his way to execution, that he is considered a dead man. Rav Sheshes says that it's talking about an impact or a hitting that did not result in damages worth more than a pruta. In other words, the damages were worth less than a pruta. Hence, there is no restitution that can be imposed. That is, as opposed to the case of Baishu Yoshein Umeis, where the person had been embarrassed and died, that there is financial restitution, because that was a case where there was more than a shofa pruta. Question: the Omar Rabbi Ami, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, he ko hakol she'ein bo shove pruta loike. But Rabbi Yochanan has said that if someone is hit and the damages that result are worth less than a shove pruta, even though there's no financial restitution, nevertheless we don't say potter, we would say he's chayav malchus, he deserves lashing. So the Gemara answers, you're right. My potter de komar. What does the term potter in the Braisa mean? Potter mi momon. He's exempt from financial restitution. Continuing, though, we just want to remind ourselves that we're talking in the source, in the last diamond source, about impact or hitting. that was valued as less than a shofar pruta. Michlal, so we can infer, debeno chayov b'mamon. Is it possible if we're saying that exemption for the achir means exemption from mamon, so chayov in the case of the son would mean obligation to pay money, but you said that the source was talking about was less than a shovet pruta, that the value was less than a shovet pruta, hence there's nothing to pay. Elo bedino. So rather, you'll have to say that the expression chayov in the case of the son means bedino, meaning chayov misa. Hochanami, so too regarding the outsider, bedino. The potter means bedino, meaning he's potter from what he should receive for hitting someone. An outsider for hitting someone would get malchus, so he should be potter from that. And there remains a question. The question being, we'll just restate that the potter bedino in the case of Asher would be potter from malchus, but he would be chayev to pay. The question, though, is why is it that there is a difference between the ben and the achir? Why do you say that the ben is chayav and the achir is potter? Elo, achir hainu taima de potter, diyomar kro, v'nosi ba'amcho lo so'or. The reason that the achir, the outsider, is poter for hitting and for cursing is because the pasuk says, when it comes to cursing, it says that anosi ba'amcho lo sor, and we explain, we interpret, sor means do not curse there. So what does it mean? Lo, it means equals pa'oisemai samcho. When is there a restriction from cursing? When the victim of the curse is someone who is doing, who has behaved properly. He's a proper individual. When it comes to someone being taken out to be executed, you're dealing with an improper individual. Hence, there's no restriction on the cursing. Ha'teinach klola. With that, we can explain the p'tur for achir when it comes to klola, when it comes to cursing. Hako minola. And what about the exemption for hitting? Answer, demakshinon hako l'klola. We compare hitting to cursing. So therefore, if you're dealing with a situation where there would be no guilt for the cursing, there would also be no guilt for the hitting. Ihochi benonami. If that be the case, namely that we've shown that there's no prohibition because he's not oisa maisa amchal, he's an improper individual, a son also should be exempt. The Gemara answers, Kida Omar Rav Pinchas. B'sha'asa tshuva. As Rav Pinchas explains elsewhere, we're dealing with an offender who has done penitence, and therefore there is guilt. Hochanami, so too with the case of the son. B'sha'asa tshuva. Just like Rav Pinchas says elsewhere, also tshuva, so too we'll explain the chiyuv on the son's part because the father did penitence. Ihochi achir nami. If that be the case, then with regard to an outsider, there should be culpability as well. Omar Rav Mori, v'amcho equals v'mekuyam shivamcho. When the pasuk says that there's a prohibition of cursing, it's talking about a person that is mekuyam, that's established, that is living, that is going to continue to live, as opposed to someone who had nigmar dino lemisa, who received a death verdict. He's not mekuyam, he's not established, he's going to die now, therefore there is exemption. And that explains why the achir is exempt. Ihochi benonami. If that be the case, so regarding the son as well, there should be an exemption because it's not be'amcha. He's not, the father is on his way to being executed. The Gemara answers, as far as the son is concerned, midi dehave la'achar misa. There is to be parallel the case of his father on his way to execution to the parallel to the case of father after death. And we hold that mekalel oviv la'achar misa, that one who curses his father after death, is chayov. Hence, this is no different. So that even though we're setting up the circumstances of this source as also tshuva, and with that we understand why the son is chayov. As far as the achir is concerned, since he's not mekuyam shiva amcho, there is exemption. the concept of Mekuyim Sheva Amcha does not apply in the case of father, because in the case of father, even after death, there is culpability. My Havi Allah, with respect to Rav Sheshes's original question, can a son be appointed as a court agent to carry out the lashings? What is the final ruling? Omar Rabo Baravuna, V'chein Tana Debe Rabbi Yishmael. The following Tanaic source shows us, L'kol Ein HaBen, Na'ase Shliach La'aviv, V'hakosei U'lekalalo. Regarding all offenders, a son cannot be appointed an agent for carrying out the lashes or the excommunication of one's father. And that point, by the way, is unlike Rav Sheshes. Chutz mimesis, as far as the source is concerned, there's one exception where a son can be appointed an agent to impose force on one's father. That's in the case where the father is guilty of mesis, where he's a seducer to idolatry. Shrei Omra Torah, in the case of the Mesis, the Torah itself says, Lo yisachmoy v'lo yisachase olav, show no mercy over such an individual. Hamake ovi v'imoy, eino chayov ad shiase bohen chabura. One who strikes his father or mother, there is no guilt, as far as capital offense is concerned, unless he imposes a bruise. Ze choymer b'mekalel mi b'maka. This is a stringency in the realm of the following, that is. The following is a stringency in the case of mekalel over the case of maka, over the case of striking. Shemekalel achar misa chayav, v'hamakel achar misa poter, where a cursing after death, after the parent's death, carries with it guilt, but hitting a parent after the parent's demise, there is no guilt. And the reason for that is that makeh is chayav, striking is chayav only upon the creation of a bruise, and a dead person does not experience bruising. We have on the side of the Gemara a nosei and mivneh heading. We'll notice diamonds. They feature Roman numerals number 1 and 2. We see here Shnei Mekoros Beinyan Chiyuv Al Hamakalel Hoirov La'achar Ptirosam. The issue being dealt with by the Gemara will be cursing parents after their passing, after their death. In the first source, we will have a basis for this according to one of two Tanoim. The Gemara will say that the first source that we label as Roman numeral number 1 with the number in a diamond, this works out according to Rabbi Yonasan's approach to darshaning psukim. But according to a second approach, the approach of Rabbi Yoshia, we are still going to be seeking out a source for Mekalel Le'achar Misa. And that will lead us to the Roman numeral number 2 later in the discussion. So the Gemara opens up with a Tanaic source, Tanu Rabbanan. We're going to be citing a Pasuk before we actually read the Pasuk in the Gemara itself, because the Gemara presents us with only a partial section of the Pasuk. What we should do is look at the side of the Gemara where you see Vayikra, Perek Chav Pasuk Tes, and we'll read the entire Pasuk first. Ki ish ish asher yikalel es aviv ve'es imoi, mois yumos, aviv ve'imoi kileil domov bo. One notices immediately that there's a bit of repetition in this pasuk. The first half of the pasuk mentions Ashir Kalel Es Aviv Es Imo, the cursing of parents, and then the latter half of the pasuk mentions this again, Aviv V'Imo Kileil. So, as we turn to the Gemara, Aviv V'Imo Kileil, and it's pointed out that this is an extra expression, as we just mentioned. What is it coming to teach us? Li'achar Misa. It's coming to teach us that there's a prohibition of cursing even after the death of the parent. Shiachol, I would have thought otherwise. Hoyol v'chayov b'makev v'chayov b'makalel. Since we know there is guilt upon striking a parent and also for cursing, ma makev eno chayov elo mechayem af hamakalel eno chayov elo mechayem. Just like striking, there is no guilt unless they are alive, because we require bruising to impose guilt. Without it, there's no guilt. So too, I would have thought that cursing is guilty only while they are alive. That's what I would have thought without the extra pasuk. The oid kal v'chomer, and further, there is a kal v'chomer logic that could be imposed. Uma make she'osa boy sheloi ba'amcho ki ba'amcho lo chayav boy la'achar misa. Mind you, maka, striking, which has a stringency attached to it, and that is that even though the victim is a rasha, is a negative individual, is an evil person, there still is a restriction in striking him. And therefore, what do we see? That makkah has this stringency, has this restriction to it. It's chomor in that it's usur to makkah, a person that's lo ba'amcho, and yet lo chayev bo la'achar misa. There is no guilt if striking is done after the individual's death. Mekalel Shelo also boy shaloi ba'amcho ke ba'amcho. Makalel, which is more lenient in the sense that the lo also the lo ba'amcho, the negative person, is not treated like ba'amcho. Eino din shelo chayav bo la'achar misa. Then makalel all the more so should have this leniency, that there should be no guilt la'achar misa. There should be no guilt if done after the victim's death. So if I was left to logic, I would have come to this conclusion that Makala L'achar Misa is not Chayav. Therefore, Talmud Loimar, the Posuk, needs to teach us Ovid V'imo Kileil. This was the opening expression of this source. We said this was an extra expression, which equals L'achar Misa, to tell me that even though Makala has a certain element of leniency, it is not so with regard to cursing after the parent's death, where we say that that is prohibited. So, if we're looking for a source for the prohibition of cursing l'achar misa, as the Mishnah said, we would have a source for it from this pasuk over v'imo kilel. And how does this serve as a source? Because we're stating that this otherwise would be an extra or an extraneous expression. Well, ha nicha l'Rabbi Yonason d'miaser leikra. This whole approach works out according to Rabbi Yonason, that views this as an otherwise extraneous posuk. Oviv v'imoi kileo. Let us read this again. Ha nicha l'Rabbi Yonason d'miaser leikra. Oviv v'imoi kileo. That particular posuk is coming to teach me la'achar misa, because otherwise it's miyaser beikra, it's extra. Evo l'Rabbi Yoshia ma'iko l'meimar, but according to Rabbi Yoshia, who does not view this as extra, he has a separate agenda for that particular pasuk. From where will I know that there's a chiyuv on kilas oviv imoy even la'achar misa? We have brackets here, and if we skip them immediately, we will notice what the answer to that question is. Notice, after the brackets, the Gemara says, Nafgole mi umekaleil ove v'imoi mois yumos. He will learn it from a different pasuk, from Shmois Perek Chof Aleph Pasuk Yud Zayin. The bracketed section that we just skipped deals with where Rabbi Yoshia analyzes the pasuk of Vayikra Chof Posuk Tes, the posuk that we said was extra according to Rabbi Yonason. What does Rabbi Yoshia do with that? So that's what's contained within the brackets. The length of this bracketed session, we should have indicated before, but we have a length indicator to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You'll notice a dash-dotted vertical line. At the end of that particular marking, the Gemara in the middle of that line, you'll see, picks up after the brackets, like we did in our reading. We've also noted this on the side where you see the double asterisk. The note in the margin says, Miyad acharei hasograyim, immediately after the bracketed section, Muva mekoro shel Rabbi Yoshia. The source for Rabbi Yoshia will be presented regarding Be'inyan Mekalel La'achar Misa. B'soch ha-sograyim, muvo ha-braisa sheboi nimtso machlikis Rabbi Yonison for Rabbi Yoshua. Within the bracketed section, the Gemara will present the Tanaic source in which Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Yonison argue concerning this particular posuk. So we turn back to the Gemara. This is, once again, Vayikra Chav Pasuk Tes. The Pasuk itself we had read at the beginning of this particular section of Gemara. It appears in the margin. You can make reference back to that. Ish Ish. Ma Tamud Lomar Ish Ish. Why the double expression? Answer. L'rabois bas tumtum v'androgynous. It's coming to include not only is a son guilty of cursing his parents, but a daughter or a child that whose gender is not clear because he's a tumtum, the identification organs are covered, or androgynous, which is a situation of a person having dual gender indicators. The pasuk says, "Asher." Anyway, we must say that bas tumtum v'androgynous, all of them are guilty if they curse their parents. The pasuk says, "Asher yekalel es aviv ve'es imoi." One who curses his mother, his father, and his mother. Ein li elo aviv ve'imoi. I would, from this pasuk, if that's all I had, I would say that guilt is achieved only if he curses both of them. What about cursing one of them? Oviv shelo imo, imo shelo oviv minai. What about cursing a father without the mother or the mother without the father? From where do I know guilt for that? Talmud lomar, oviv v'imoi kileil. From the second expression. This is the same expression that Rabbi Yonason used for l'achar misa. Here we see that this extra expression is teaching me aviv kileil, imo kileil. Father alone or mother alone, if they're cursed, there is guilt. Divrei Rabbi Yoshua. By the way, how do you see from this extra expression, how do you see the idea of alone, of singularity? So, with our markings, based, of course, on Rashi's explanation, notice the two phrases that are marked with dotted and dashed underlines. In the first instance, you notice the word in the word yikaleel, and by the way, in both instances, the word klola or kileel is dotted underline. So in the first instance, which parent was closest to the word yikaleel? So you can see the dashed underline parent there is oviv. In the second instance, which parent is closest to the word kileel? There, notice the dashed underline imo, the mother is closest. From the differentiation in proximity, Rav Yoshua comes to the conclusion that each parent by themselves, from the fact that the proximity has been changed, the Torah is indicating one parent alone is grounds for guilt in the case of cursing. Going on in the source, Rav Yonason Omer, Mashma Shneim Keachod, Mashma Echod V'Echod Bifnei Atzmo, Ad Sheyifrot V'Cho HaKosuv Yachdov. Even though the pasuk said "Asher yikalel es oviv ve'es imo," which sounded like together, Rabbi Yonason doesn't automatically assume togetherness. Even though both are stated together, the protim, the individual elements, can be understood in a singular fashion as well. Only if, according to Rabbi Yonason, only if the Torah uses a joining word like the word yachdov. And you find an example of that in the case of the prohibition of plowing with two different types of animals, where it says, Beshor v'chamor yachdov, do not plow with those two animals together. If you don't find a joining word like that, one does not automatically assume togetherness. So according to Rabbi Yoshua, Mino lei, where does Rabbi Yoshua learn the prohibition of cursing after the death of a parent? Answer, Nafgole mi umekalel oviv v'imoi mois yumos. From the pasuk in Shmos, Perek Chof Aleph, pasuk Yud Zayin. V'idach, Rabbi Yonason, Hahu miboyale l'rabois, he needs that pasuk to include bas tumtum v'androgynous. We saw this inclusion in the Tanaic source from the expression ish ish. That was Rabbi Yoshio's approach, but Rabbi Yonasan says, I learn it from Shmos Chofalov Pasuk Yud Zayin. Question, V'tepuk le me'ish ish, why doesn't Rabbi Yonasan learn to the inclusion of Bas, Tumtum, and Androgynous from the same source that Rabbi Yoshio learned, namely from ish ish, the double expression? More answers. Dibro Torah Koloshim B'nei Odom. As far as Rabbi Yonasan is concerned, double expressions are not automatically there for expansion or for deriving things, because the Torah allows itself to speak as common people speak as well, and for emphasis purposes, people often double up their language. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice a topic heading, the Nosei, Ha'im Mutar Lahakois Rosha. Is it allowed to strike, to hit a Rosha? Misha'eno Oisa Maisa Amcha. Someone who is not doesn't keep the mitzvahs, doesn't keep the Torah. Ha'im makshinon hekish, that is, comparison. Do we make a comparison? Hakol l'klola, hitting to the rules of cursing. In the realm of cursing, it's pretty much established that there's no prohibition of cursing someone who is a Rosha. Do we compare the dinim of hitting to the dinim of cursing? The Gemara goes on. V'lisni, why not teach in the Mishnah? You'll notice we have a star at to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, which draws your attention to a star that you'll find on the upper part of the page. In the Mishnah, there was an expression, Zeh choymer b'makalel b'mamakeh, there's a stringency regarding makalel over makeh, the Mishnah said, because makalel is chayev after misa, whereas makeh is not. Could we not have taught something in the opposite direction? V'lisni chomer b'make b'mamakala. Could we not have taught that there's a stringency in the realm of hitting that you don't find in makalel? Shahamake osaboy shaloi b'amcha kib'amcha. Masha'enkein b'makalel. That in the case of striking, in the case of hitting, the Torah makes the law that prohibits striking applies equally to a low ba'amcha, a negative person, as it applies to striking a righteous person. Namely, that it's osur l'hakus rosho, which is not the case in klola, where it is mutter l'kalel the rosho. So why doesn't the Mishnah teach this element, this stringency in the case of makkah over makalel? Answer, Kosovar makshinon hakoh l'klola, because our Mishnah is of the opinion that one compares the dinim of hakoh to klola. As a result of that, just like in the case of klola, there is no restriction if you're dealing with a rosha, so too in the case of striking, there is no restriction, and one would be allowed to strike a rosha. Before we go further, let us just show another element of our markings. We've double underlined certain key words in our discussion. The words makeh and makalel, these words were also double underlined in the Mishnah, so that you would be able to make an easy comparison between that which the Mishnah features and that which is featured over here. The Gemara continues, Lema, we are starting here a long question. The length of this question is indicated to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara with the shin that's encircled, a she'ela with a vertical dashed line indicating its length. Lema hani tanoi kehani tanoi. Can we say that these tanoim, the machloikis between the Mishnah and the Braisa, concerning whether it's mutter v'hakois rosha, can be paralleled to the following tanoim that we will see very shortly. Before we go further, let's glance at the Rashi, where there is a star in the over the Dibor Masfil, Lemo Hani Tanoi, Tano de Masnisin. We've written in between the lines, Dematir Lahakis Rosha, the Tana of our Mishnah, that in effect allows the hitting of an evil person. The Lo Tana Chomer B'Makeh she'asaboy shaloi ba'amcha kiba'amcha. The Mishnah refrained from teaching a stringency of makah over makal, because there is no stringency in that respect, because he is makish hakol leklola v'tana debraiso deli'el, as opposed to the tana of the brisa that we saw before that forbade hitting a rasha. The tana, the brisa taught uma make she'asa boy, mind you, maka that made the lo ba'amcha ke ba'amcha. This is information we saw above in the brisa. So we see two Tanaic opinions in disagreement regarding the issue of striking a rasha. So can we say that those two opinions parallel the following two opinions? The Tani Chada, Husi Ato Mitzuve Al HaKasoi, Vi Ato Mitzuve Al Kiloso. The Kusi people, with regard to them, these are people that came to the land of Israel. They were an idolatrous people, and they supposedly converted. But in the course of time, they were found to be non-observant. They were found to be rishoyim. So the source says that Kusi, you are commanded regarding hitting him. In other words, usur to hit him. V'yata mitzuvah kolosa, but there's no isur, there's no prohibition when it comes to cursing him. V'tanya idach, the other source says, I'ata mitzuvah lo al kiloloso v'lo al hakoso. You are not restricted from cursing him, nor from hitting him. Before going further, just let us take note of our markings. We have dashed underlined expressions. In the first source, we've dashed underlined kusi, ato mitzuva al-kosu, means you're commanded not to hit the kusi. In the second source, it says, I ato mitzuva, and also we dash an al-hakoso, highlighting the clear difference between the two sources. Savruha, we're now going to make an assumption. And we've also employed a triangle marking to assist in seeing what points are the subject of agreement. That's called Dekulei Alma. As we set up this discussion, we will be featuring the points in agreement and points of disagreement. And the points of disagreement will be featured in the house form that you see. So, as we analyze these two sources that we've numbered one and two, Savrua, we're going to lay down a certain assumption, the Kulei Alma, Kusim equals Gere MS Haim, that everyone is going to assume that the original conversion of the Kusi people was a legitimate conversion. That's called Gere Emes, literally a legitimate conversion to Judaism. So as such, even though in the course of time they veered off the path and continued and returned to idolatrous practices, nevertheless their initial conversion established them as Jews, and as such they will have the standard applied to the Jewish people. My lav b'hal komiflegi. With that in mind, we can now say the point of this disagreement is as follows. The mor savar, the second source that says that parallels klola to makah, holds makshinun hakol the klola, that we compare the rules of hakol, the rules of hitting, to the rules of cursing. And just like cursing is not restricted when it comes to Rishoyim, and these Kusim, even though they were Gerei Emes, nevertheless in the course of time they became Rishoyim. So just like the cursing is not restricted, so too the hitting of them is not restricted. That's source number two. Umor Savar, the first source that's labeled number one, holds Lo Makshinon HaKol LeKlola, that we do not compare the rules of hitting to the rules of cursing, that even though cursing may be allowed when dealing with a Rasha, it's not allowed to hit him. That, by the way, that opinion would parallel what we saw above in the Brisa. The source number two over here that does compare Hakol Aklola would parallel the opinion reflected in the Mishnah that says that the Mishnah that suggested that there is no restriction in hitting a Rasha, just like in cursing a Rasha. The Gemara rejects this attempt to parallel and says, lo, de kule alma, as far as these two Tanaic sources that we labeled 1 and 2, both of them agree, loy makshinon hako'o leklola. We do not compare the rules of hako'o to klola. And therefore, it would be prohibited to hit a person who is a Rasha, which at the same time is allowed to curse him. That's lo makshin hako'o leklola. So if everyone is in agreement with that, then v'hocha b'hol k'miflegi. Here, though, what is their point of disagreement? Mor savar kusim gerei emes hein. Source 1 that forbids the hitting is because he holds, like we said before, that the kusim were originally gerei emes, establishing them as Jews. Umor Sofar, the second opinion holds, Kusim Gere Aroyos Heim. The Kusim never experienced a proper conversion in the first place. Their conversion was out of fear of lions that were attacking them. And because they felt threatened, they offered to convert as a means of trying to save themselves. But that is not a true conversion. And as such, they remain as idol worshippers all through the generations. They never were Jews. And as idol worshippers, there is no restriction of hako in the first place. Therefore, that's what source number 2 indicates. Just like it's permitted to curse them, it is also permitted to hit them. Ihochi, if this be the case, that the ptur, the exemption, is because they are gerei aroyos, that they were never Jews, and that ptur was featured, that exemption was featured in what we labeled above as source number 2, well then I'm going to have difficulty understanding that which also appears in that source. Ihochi hainu dekatoni Allah. Are we therefore to understand that which it says concerning that source, namely number 2, v'shoro ki Yisrael, that the way we treat his ox, we would treat him with the Jewish standard? The Jewish standard means that for a shor tam, a domesticated type shor, if it damages, he pays only half damages. And only if it's a shor hamuad does he pay full damages. But if you're telling me that the exemption for cursing and hitting, primarily for hitting, in source number 2 is a function of his being a gerei aroyos, then why would it say concerning that, regarding that source, why would it say shoro ki Yisrael? He's not a Yisrael. He remains an idol worshiper. So this second approach to explain the distinction between the two sources falls away. Rather, we revert to the first approach, which said that the point of machlokas between source 1 and 2 is regarding do we make the hekesh between hako and klola. And if that be the case, we can parallel this machlokas tanoim to the machlokas tanoim that we saw between the Mishnah and the Braisa above. As we go on in our reading, we notice a Mishnah with diamonds in it. These are explained on the side under the heading Nosei Mivneh, Mikrim Shonim Shel Genevas Nefesh, different examples of kidnapping, different circumstances concerning kidnapping. Of course, in the opening Mishnah of the Perek, we mentioned Gonev Nefesh Misrael as an example of Nechnokim, of those that are high of the strangulation penalty. The Mishnah, Hagoinev Nefesh Misrael, Eino Chayov Ad Shiachni Senu Lirishuso. One who engages in kidnapping a Jew, he is not guilty until the kidnapper brings the victim into his domain. The Pasuk says, V'nimtza biyado. Before we go further in the Gemara, we will benefit by just glancing at the Pasuk that's included on the side. It says, in Dvarim Perek Chav Dalet Pasuk Zayin, Ki yimotzei ish goinev nefesh me'echov mibnei Yisrael, vis amer boi umechoroi, umeis hagana fahu, ubiar tohoro mikir becha. Continuing in the Mishnah, We made reference to the pasuk that said v'nimtza biyado. Rashi features this pasuk and cites that that's from Shmois. The Gemara, we in the Rashi, in parentheses, you find a citation to Shmois Chof Beis. Continuing in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Av Shiach Nisenu L'Rishuso V'Yishtamesh Boi. Not only is it necessary in order to achieve guilt that he is brought into his domain, in other words, that the victim of the kidnapping is brought into the kidnapper's domain, but the kidnapper also has to use him. Shinemar, the Pasuk says, V'Yishamer Boi U'Mechoroi. This was in Devarim Chavdale Pasuk Zayin. V'Yishamer is a word indicating shimush, use of. Hagoinev es benoi, one who kidnaps his son. Rabbi Shmuel benoi sherabbi Yochanan broka mechayev v'chachomim potrim. Regarding this, we have a machlokas tanoim. Gonav mi shechetshev el chesiv ben chorin. If someone who has the status of half slave, half free man, someone like that was kidnapped, Rabbi Yehuda mechayev v'chachomim potrim. Regarding this too, you see a machlokas tanoim. The Gemara asks, the Tanakama lo boy imur. In our Mishnah, we saw only Rabbi Yehuda say that guilt is achieved only if, in addition to bringing into one's domain, there is also use of the victim. Does the Tanakama not require use? After all, the Pasuk makes reference to this. Omar Rav Acho Breid Rova, imur pochos mishove pruta ikubinayu. Everyone requires use. The issue is what happens if the value of the use that one, or the use or the benefit that one derives from using the victim is less than a shava pruta, pruta being a form of currency. What if the value is less than that small coin in value? Then that itself is the point of difference. Iko benayo is the point of difference between the two opinions. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiya. Gonvoi u'mechoroi yoshein mahu. What is the law with regard to someone who is kidnapped and stolen while he is sleeping? As to what the problem is, the Gemara will explain momentarily. And number two, another question is, mochar isha l'ubro mahu. A person kidnaps a woman and sells, not the woman, but sells the fetus in the woman. Now, the question is, mahu? Yesh derech imur bekach, o ein derech imur bekach. In the theft of these people, the gonvoi umochro yoshein, or the isha ubra, is that considered derech imur? Derech imur means, is it a normal way of using them? The Gemara, with response to this particular question, will, after the brackets, answer teku. It remains unresolved. Within the brackets, though, the Gemara attempts to say that the question doesn't even get started. The Gemara asks, in the brackets, v'tepuk lei, why not learn out the leko imur klal? There is no use whatsoever. All that you said is that a person kidnapped and sold the pregnant woman's fetus. Where do we see any use whatsoever? The Gemara answers, lo tzricha. No, the question is necessary to be raised as follows. In the case of Yoshein, the person who was kidnapped was sleeping. You would ask, where is the use? The answer is, dezoga ale. The kidnapper leaned on him and derived benefit by leaning on him. Isha, the case of the pregnant woman, de ukmo ba'api zika. He placed her in front of him in the face of a wind, so that she served as a wind blocker. So regarding these cases, the question is raised. Derech imur bekach, is this called normal use of the victim? Oy ein derech imur bekach. Or maybe we don't call that normal use of the victim. Normal benefit from the victim. Mai, so what is the halacha? Teku. This remains unresolved. As we go on in the Gemara, we will take note of the topic heading that we've attached to this in the margin. Mekoros beinyon, sources regarding mi hu haganov umi hanignav. Who is the thief and who is the victim? in order to achieve guilt. Tanu Rabbanan. The source begins by featuring a pasuk in Devarim, Perek Chavdalet Pasuk Zayin. This is the pasuk that we cited earlier. Ki yimotze ish goinev nefesh me'echov. From this pasuk, ein li elo ish shigonav. From this I see a male who is a kidnapper. Isha minayin. From where am I to derive a female kidnapper, that she is also guilty? Talmud Lomar, the pasuk says, v'gonev ish. This is a pasuk in Shmos, Perek Chof Aleph Pasuk Zayin. Rashi explains where the star appears toward the bottom of the page, v'gonev. The word v'gonev is a reference to the thief. Who is the thief? Well, it doesn't say who the thief is. It says who the victim is. It says v'gonev ish, one who steals a man. Who is the thief, though? So we see afilu isho gonevis mashma. The word v'gonev includes a woman as well. So at this point, if we take stock of what we've learned, let's continue. Ein li elo ish shegonav bein isha ubein ish v'isha shegonvo ish. Up till this point, I can see that if a man is a kidnapper, as far as the victim in that case, it doesn't matter whether it be a female or a male, whether the victim is a woman or a man. And this we were able to derive from the pasuk in Devarim, the pasuk that we saw before in Vayikra, or we saw a citation of Ki Motzei Ish from Devarim. My mistake, let's just make things a little accurate here. The pasuk in Devarim, Chav Dalid, allowed us to see Ki Motzei Ish Gonev Nefesh, where you found a man, a kidnapper, stealing a soul, meaning man or woman. So that establishes this point number one. That was established, again, from Devarim, Perek Chav Dalid. And Shmois Chof Aleph allows us to conclude, let's continue reading, the Isha Shigon V'ish, where the Pasuk said, V'gonev Ish U'mechoro. There's still something unresolved. Isha Shigon V'isha Minayin. How about a woman who kidnaps a woman? Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, U'meis Haganav Ahu Mikol Mokoim. And the kidnapper shall be put to death. Which kidnapper? Well, who did he kidnap? Doesn't matter. That's what Mikomakom, under all circumstances. Anyone who he kidnapped, if he does that, he, the kidnapper, is put to death. Tanya Idach, another Tanaic source. Ki motzei ish goinev nefesh me'echov. Echod ha-goinev es ho-ish, v'echod ha-goinev es ho-isha. The Pasuk said here, goinev nefesh. Nefesh includes a man, includes a woman, v'echod ger, v'echod eved meshuchor, v'koton. It includes if the victim is a convert, if the victim is a freed slave, or even if he be a minor. In all cases, they fall under the category of nefesh. Gonvoy v'lo mochroi. Let us say there's a kidnapping, but the kidnapper has not sold the victim yet. Mochroi va'adayin yeshno birshu. So let us say the kidnapper concluded a sale, but the victim is still in the domain of him, of the victim's domain. In other words, someone tried to sell someone while the victim is still at home. Potter, he's exempt because he didn't kidnap him yet. He just concluded a sale. The thief, if you will, concluded a sale behind his back, but he didn't steal him yet. Mochroi le'aviv oy le'achiv. If the sale that was done by the kidnapper, he sold the victim to the victim's father, or to the victim's brother, oy le'echad min akroivim, or to one of the other relatives, chayov. Hagoinev es ho'avodim poter. However, one who steals a slave is exempt. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.